Didn't you hear me?
I guess she got kicked out or something. So you want to go into your talk, Kent?
Sorry? What was that, Mike?
Are you ready to do your talk?
Yes.
All right, go right into it.
Okay, thanks so much. Thank you so much for the vision you had weeks ago and the effort you put into this kind of new technology, and where, you know, none of this would happen unless you started this, like, what, 3 weeks ago, almost instantaneously. So the efforts that you put in to make all this possible for us and set the stage, I've been involved with trying to put this conference together, and you put like just about one a day for the last 3 weeks. So I definitely respect what you put into it, and thank you so much to your effort and for the venue. So I want to thank Billy to help put together something that we hope is value to a lot of people with everything's changing so rapidly. Everyone's consumed with fear, and a lot of people want to, at least I do, you know, just lock it down into, I don't want to change. I don't want anything to change. I want it to be exactly the way it always has been. And so, so I think fear of change is a big part of my makeup, but, I do realize this is the time for us to reach out and, be concerned with the newcomer. And I know, Mike, that was your motivation. I hear you say that constantly, to lower the barriers, to let the newcomer in. And I thank you for that. The rest of the people who worked on this, they don't show up, but Paula and Matt and Stacy and Julie and, Robert and Kara, and I think Lisa, I mean, there's a whole bunch of people that are behind the scenes making this actually work. So I want to thank all those people for doing that. Yeah, I appreciate everybody's effort. I do want to take responsibility for a couple of mistakes. My topic probably should be step 10. There was an email that went out, looked like it was from Dr. Bob's, had the blue people on there. And I had asked someone to help me put together a flyer, and I failed to look at that before it went out. I mean, I knew better, but the person who put it together did not. So I take full responsibility for that mistake. I also have been, I actually have a t-shirt that says Inspiring Rebellion Since 8888. So my name is Kent Davis. My home group is the Love and Service Group in Pleasant Hill, California. And I got sober 8888 and been irritating people. Tom used to say there are some people who are supposed to comfort the afflicted, and looks like you're really the one to inflict the comfortable. So I apologize. My topic, by the way, is doing 12-step work in this age. And I happen to have come from an era where we did a lot of 12-step work. My first involvement with a hotline was like 30 days sober. They were switching from a diverter to the new technology called call forwarding. And with that, we was my first hotline shift over 30 years ago. In that 30 years, you know, there's been a lot of calls that have come through, and I've been on the hotline on Saturday night for the last 30 some years. And it's we get some angry people, we get some frequent callers. I can remember there was a time we had, we actually bonded all of the volunteers together because Sue from Martinez was a frequent caller, called every night. I don't know that she ever went to an AA meeting or ever got sober, but she sure helped us band together and provide a unified front. We all referred Sue to Debbie so that there was always one person that Debbie had to talk to. That it, anyway, it's just a great service. The result of that was that we also had dozens of 12-step calls. And so oftentimes we would go out to the drunk's home, and I can remember one guy said, "Oh, come on in when you get here." And when I get there, I'm walking up to the front door, and it's clear there's nobody else been to this front door for a long time. There's papers and trash and everything built up, and doors are all locked. I'm hammering on it, and he doesn't let me in. And so I call him up. Call him back, and he answers the phone, and he says, "Oh no, come in the back door, come in the sliding glass door." So we go in the sliding glass door, and here's a guy sitting in a rocker recliner, and he's got empty bottles spread out from him about 3 feet. And his kitchen, oh God, it's overflowing with dishes and boxes of food, so he goes to the bathroom at one point, and he comes back, you know, a bit slurring his words, "I love you, baby. I love you, brother." And obviously it had something in the bathroom hidden that, that we didn't know about. Anyway, doing there's just been a lot of fun times. I mean, he was the one that made me remember that AA perfume. You remember when the alcohol comes through a person's pores? I always think of that as like AA perfume. So at one point, we were getting one or two 12-step good calls every shift. I mean, I'd be on Saturday night, and I'd get awakened once or twice a night. But well, I think now we get them like maybe once a month. But the other 2 weeks ago, I got a hotline call. I was really hoping he would stay in touch. I did make it possible, even under the stay-at-home orders. I did manage to get him a book, and I think that's one of the issues that we're going to have to figure out. How do you get literature to new people? What we did, I drove out to where he lives and kept 10 feet distance between us and put the book down and let him and had a nice chat, short chat with him. So when we get a call on the phone, I always have to remember, you know, sometimes when you awaken in the middle of the night, it isn't always the first thing on your mind. Sometimes it's like, I don't want to answer that call. But really, somebody has probably had that moment of clarity, or something is so devastating in his life that he is reaching out to get an answer that he doesn't have. And I think I have to remember that the guy who's making that phone call, his life may depend on me answering that phone. So when you get the call, it's what I, just having so many calls over the years, I've found that some people get thirsty, and there's a period of time where you have to reconnect. So somebody calls me on the hotline, and I'm going to call someone on the 12-step list, and I need that person to reconnect with the caller within like 15 minutes, because if they don't get that call back in 15 minutes, then if I can't get somebody, I just keep calling them back every 15 minutes. But what happens is that, you know, that drink starts talking to you and looking awful good, and that moment of clarity begins to fade. So there was one time that we were having a wedding in our backyard. And I get a 12-step call. And so after the wedding, it was more than 15 minutes, obviously. The groom, the best man and me all dressed up in our, you know, zoot suits, show up at the guy's house, and he opens the door and says, "I don't want anything you got to sell," and slams the door in our face. So he clearly had taken a drink from the time he called. And there was another guy who called, and it took me a while to get there. I don't remember what the circumstances are, but I do remember the gun he pulled and said he didn't want anything we had to offer. And so, you know, some of the most enjoyable experiences of my life, probably some of the most fun times, are taking somebody brand new to a 12-step call. I'd say there's two of my favorite things to do in Alcoholics Anonymous. One is to go on a 12-step call with somebody brand new. And the other, of course, is to watch someone change right before your eyes as they're doing the fifth step, and God is transforming that person into a whole new person. So when I am answering the hotline, I've developed, well, not just actually for the hotline, but even guys who asked me to work with them, I decided I'd like to figure out if the person I'm talking with has got a problem with alcohol. Oftentimes, you know, it kind of looks that way. You know, they lost their job, their wife's kicked them out, or whatever. But, you know, they really, they're in trouble. But, you know, so I'm trying to find out, well, yeah, but have you ever, you know, tried to quit drinking? I come up with enough questions to try and get them to feed me the information that I'm looking for. I'm not trying to get him to tell me he's an alcoholic, but I'm trying to find out if I believe there's enough evidence to say that he's a potential alcoholic. Because if he's not, then I need to get him where he needs to be. Sometimes it's a mental thing. Sometimes it's Narcotics Anonymous. So I'm kind of looking right in that first question to find out what it is. The second question is, you know, to find out, you know, are you interested in stopping? oftentimes the guy says, yeah, I've been an alcoholic for 30 years, you know, and yeah, it's destroyed everything in my life. And, oh, good, you know, but, you know, I'm really like to know if you have any interest in not drinking. Yeah, no, not what my wife does, but not me. But when the guy says, oh, yeah, I tried so many times, oh, I just can't. I mean, I can't stop. I want to, but I can't, you know. It's like, okay, well, we got question two down. And then question three is, you know, do you want help? Do you want help? And when somebody answers those three questions in a positive way, like they've got me, I'm in for the long haul. And my objective is to never let them think that AA let them down. So I will be there and I'll match their enthusiasm. And I will do everything I can to equal their effort as long as they're doing it. And for a guy who crawled out from under a bush 31 years ago to be of value to another human being is important. So, let's talk about, so now we're going to go, we've done the phone call, now we're going to go to the guy's house. And what are we going to do? What are we going to do when we get there? Well, my favorite thing I said is to grab someone, preferably in their first 30 days, at least someone in their first year. Sometimes it's hard to get people up in the middle of the night to go on a 12-step call, but that's typically when the good ones are. And so I, the guy I sponsored loves to tell the story that, so we're in the car and I told him to bring two books, bring his book and bring another book for the newcomer. And so he's got two books and I said, okay, open to chapter 7 because we in there are going to be the instructions of what we need to follow to do this 12-step call. And his, he was pretty new, so he said, I can't believe we're going to in the middle of the night to help this guy, and my sponsor doesn't have a clue what we're doing. He wants me to read the book and find out what it is we're supposed to be doing. So, anyway, I would say probably the most important thing, the most important line in 12-step work is the first line in chapter 7. And it says something like practical experience shows that nothing so much will ensure immunity from drinking as intensive work with other alcoholics. So I'm here at this guy's house, not for me. I mean, not for him, but for me. I'm doing it primarily to stay sober. I'm not doing it to get him sober. And, you know, just on a personal note, because of the value of newcomers to me, I made a decision that I'd always have at least one person actively working the steps in my life at all times. What it does is it just shows me that the program's still working. And it sure doesn't get, it doesn't get sour or stale when you see that somebody new is applying the steps that are in this program to their life, and their life is obviously changing. So when I'm talking to a prospect, when I walk in that door, I'm putting in my mind that I am answering a request. This man has asked for help, hope, really. And my answer is my experience. I'm going to stick to what it is that is my experience. No one can argue with my experience, but you can always argue with my opinion. But I'm not going to be telling him, you know, you got to go 3 meetings a week, get yourself a sponsor, work the steps, read the book. No, I'm going there to really connect with this guy. I need to do whatever it takes to get him to understand that he and I are alike, and that I have been where he's been. If I can help him just open that door just a little to where he might listen or trust or believe that maybe I've got an answer to the problem that he has, well, I think that's critical. I think that 15 minutes that I talked about is critical. I really think that the connection that we make with the newcomer is critical. So I think that my efforts then are to get him to relate, to identify, and to connect. And it's that hooks the potential member into, maybe you've got something for me. So in the book it says, when he sees you know all about the drinking game, then he probably is in that state where he might be able to listen to you just a tiny bit. And of course, on a 12-step call, it's so fun. So I tell him, so let's go find the alcohol that you got hidden around your house and let's go pour it out. Oh my God. That is if they balk right there, we can leave. And that's happened. I mean, you know, he wants to protect his supply. But you know, the ones that go and get it. There was this one guy, he's over the sink with the bottle, and I'm not pouring it out for him. I want them to pour it out. And he's pouring it out, and he says, "Oh my God, it's like pouring out my blood." And I was thinking, yep, I understand that one. I totally related. But, you know, there's been others. There was one guy who said, you know, "You guys got to leave now because my brother, who's a mechanic, he's coming over to help me work on my car." Well, it's 2:00 in the morning. He obviously was no longer asking for help. He just needed us to leave. And I think we have to respect the fact that not everybody is going to get it the first time around. So let's assume, though, that the guy is a bit receptive. And so what is it we want to accomplish on a 12-step call? You know, I think the very first thing I alluded to was that that he has some idea that his problem is an allergy to alcohol, that he's got some kind of obsession that he does not have control over. If I can establish in him that he believes in some way, or could believe in some way, that his life depends on finding another way of life, and it really, the problem is not them, the problem really amounts to alcoholism, not alcohol, but alcoholism. Now, I'm not sure that I can always accomplish that. There are times when I will take someone on to sponsor him who's new. It may take me months of working with him to get him to actually, you know, concede that, oh, well, God, I hate to say it. So for me, I was going to meetings for a year and 2 weeks, and I'm listening to a guy named Pat Hyde. And Pat Hyde started talking about, you know, every time he gotten drunk and was in done something he was embarrassed about, he was loaded. Well, I got sentenced to Alcoholics Anonymous, and I was not an alcoholic. I mean, I had no reason to be an AA except to get my card signed. I mean, I was sent here by the judge. So, I mean, I'm not alcoholic. I just need my card signed. Until Pat said that, I don't know why I started thinking about it. Every time I've been in trouble with the law or done something I was embarrassed about, I was loaded. And it was like I was now a year and 2 weeks of going to meetings, oftentimes, because I wasn't working, oftentimes twice a day. So I that whole idea of, you know, being convinced that you are alcoholic and, you know, the only step you have to do 100% couldn't take a whole lot. But on that 12-step call, I still want to get them to that place. Then, you know, I really want them to get a simple concept that, you know, when we poured that alcohol out, what was it, an hour ago? 2 hours ago, whatever it was, you haven't drank since then. And I check with them. I mean, have you had a desire to drink? Well, yeah, but you didn't. No, I didn't. And I'm saying, so what I hear you saying is that, you know, with us, it's possible not to drink. So the second thing I try and get them to do is to accept the reality that they can make it an hour or two without drinking. And if I can get them to do that, then we're pretty well on our way. And then the third thing I try and get them to do is to accept the reality that together we can do what they can't do on their own. I can't even imagine how many people I've heard say, you know, "I tried stopping drinking before I got to AA and I just couldn't do it. I couldn't do it alone." And I believe that's what we can do. I think we identify, I think we connect with them, and we make it possible for people to believe that we actually have a solution. And that alone, that kind of hope that we give, is the third thing that I try and establish. If we can get it established that maybe that the impossible can be done as long as we do this together, then I feel that it's been a successful 12-step call. Of course, we, however, it turns out, as far as connecting him to, we're gonna, to AA, there's all sorts of ways of doing that. Oftentimes, some of the people that have been on the 12-step call will, you know, keep in touch with him, get him to meetings, and get him a sponsor and all the rest. But the 12-step call's done. And, of course, we give him a book to read. Well, now we've got a whole new set of circumstances in the world. And I think that what I would like to carry forward from the time I spent trying to get people who are right on that edge of trying to call, how are we going to get the people who are right on the edge? I believe it's our responsibility to start more actively connecting with where drunks show up. You know, the hospitals, the recovery places, the cops, parole departments. But I think that the burden is on us, but it's also to lower the barriers to get, into a meeting. I wouldn't say that we're going to a guy who lives 30 miles away and doesn't have any transportation, there's no AA meetings near him. I think we will lower the barriers. Some of us will go drive out there and help him get to a meeting. I think we can do the same thing by figuring out a way. There's all sorts of, I don't know what they call it in the rest of the country, but in this area, they've been calling it an Obama phone. And everybody who's homeless these days has an Obama phone. And maybe we should figure out a way to get Zoom already on there. So that, anyway, what I'm saying is you're not going to have the guy download, find the code, enter the password and think that, you know, a drunk in a stupor. Well, Joe Smoot used to say about me that I couldn't say my whole name for 6 months. So for me to navigate how to download and install and be a registered user on Zoom, probably an impossible task, but maybe there's other ways that we can do that. I think we have a responsibility to show up where the drunks are showing up. And a big part of that is a better, you know, a better relationship with the treatment centers, getting the local meetings that have Zoom online meetings now, get that known to the local treatment centers. And then just because everybody's been using a PowerPoint, I thought I would do one. So on there, I think it says that we've been supplied with newcomers from treatment centers, and I think it's now our responsibility to go out and start doing more outreach, and that's really the the part I would say. Keep in mind that you know, when a person shows up in a newcomer meeting, at least like for me, I didn't raise my hand for over a year. So I think if we had some way that we asked people who were under 30 days and find out who they were and have a 12-step team that you know, reaches out to those people and does whatever they can, figure out a way to get literature to these people, and get them into at least online readings for now. So that's my entire presentation. Thank you very much for listening.